Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear precious Blood River Radio family, I'm trying not to cough so much. We have reinforcements. We have the bitter in there himself. He's been, like as usual, he's been out behind enemy lines. And he's taking off his soldier hat right now. He's putting on his professor's hat. And I said, like I said in the show notes, if you're going to come to class, yeah, I wouldn't want to be late for the class because the bitter ender has run more than one Yankee through. And you know what? I don't think a student would be safe from beginning to run through with one of his brand new ultra third generation titanium swords. So don't be late. If you are, it's your own peril. I take no responsibility for what happens. But go ahead, Bitter Ender, Professor Bitter Ender.
Well, that sounds like Vince Lombardi time. When Coach Lombardi was head coach of the Green Bay Packers, they said if the team meeting started at 8 o'clock, that meant you were supposed to be there at 7:50. If you showed up at 8 o'clock, you were late. So that's kind of the time schedule I've always been on. It's a lot easier just to wait outside the door than it is come running up the hall and come dragging in after the meeting's already started. So we won't do that to our listeners. So we're glad to have them on board whatever time they get here.
Well, we
talked about this. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ellie.
Oh, just so that's a good thing. You know, Vince Lombardi was the man. When I was in junior high school, I think it was, this will be a quick aside. We had, he's deceased now, but our coach Billy Key, Korean War Marine. He was a badass. After every report card period, you had to go see Coach Key, and it was like one lick for a D, two licks for an F. I mean, you get that butt tore up. But he had a poster, several of them in the room, athletic room, and it said, and I think he credited with Coach Lombardi for saying it. It's not a champion. A champion is not someone who never gets knocked down. A champion is someone who, when he gets knocked down, he gets back up again. And he had another quote: "It's not always the size of the dog in the fight. Sometimes it's the fight and the dog that decides the issue." But I just thought I'd throw that out there. Ancient history for our younger students tonight in Blood River Radio's advanced history class.
Yeah. That's it. quite a different type of situation in the National Football League back in the 60s, 50s and 60s than it is today.
Yes.
But anyway, a lot of things have changed since then. So I thought tonight, we had talked about this earlier, about going through the period in the South known as Reconstruction, which was actually redestruction of the South, of what the war didn't destroy, and explain to our listeners what really happened those 12 years after the war. And a lot of the notes are taken from a program we had by Scott Sally at our Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp about a week or so ago on Reconstruction. And he said Reconstruction went from 1865 and officially ended in 1877. But his program was Reconstruction went from 1865 to 2024. And we're going to talk about some of the things that have happened to the South in recent history. So going to the dictionary definition of Reconstruction, it says the act or process of rebuilding, repairing, or restoring something, taking something back to the way it was. But that wasn't the way it was applied to the South. They had a period of active Reconstruction, as we mentioned, from 1865 to 1877, and then passive Reconstruction that went from about 1877 to somewhere around 1990, early, late 1900s, and then active Reconstruction from 1990 to the present. As Reconstruction was defined in American history, it was really the imposition of a Marxist communist rule in the United States, which began in the North in 1848 with the 48ers. And people are going, "Oh, Andrews, you got it wrong. It's the 49ers. No, that was in the gold fields out west. The 48ers were people that escaped Europe after these failed socialist or communist revolutions in Europe. They wound up in this country in the Northeast and in the Midwest. And they were the founders of the modern-day Republican Party. It gained momentum with the formation of the Republican Party in 1854, and the communist clubs were instrumental in the formation of the Republican Party. 19 of its founding delegates were members of the communists or the socialists. The first presidential nominee in 1856, John C. Fremont, was an avowed socialist. And Lincoln regularly corresponded with Karl Marx through his assistant secretary of war, the Marxist Charles Dana.
That's incredible.
And in May of 1859, Lincoln secretly published a privately owned German newspaper, the Illinois Staatsanzeiger, which published all of Karl Marx's essays. When Lincoln was reelected in 1864, Marx wrote a congratulatory letter to him. And because Marx said that the only way for communism to take over a country was to have a very strong central government. As long as you had these 30 or 40 states that control the power, they couldn't go in and win elections in 30 or 40 states. They had to have one strong central government taken over by the communists, and it didn't matter what kind of government they had in Georgia, Alabama, Montana, Michigan, wherever, because the central government would crush the states, which is exactly what has happened. And the Confederacy defined was, it was a resistance to the imposition of the Marxist communist rule. And Lincoln even invaded the border states before the First Battle of Manassas. These were supposedly neutral, or states like Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri were supposedly in the United States, but he brought his troops in there to enforce martial law on these border states that did not secede until after Lincoln sent his troops in there. A Union Army officer, U.S. Army officer, Don Platt, said the true story of the late war has not yet been told. It probably never will be told. It is not flattering to our people. Unpalatable truths seldom find their way into history. In other words, the winners write the history book, and they're going to tell their side of the story. And then we have other quotes from the Union Army and officers that led the assault against the South and the war against civilians and broke all kind of international laws when they did it. One of the worst, of course, was William T. Sherman, and he wrote in the New York Times in April of 1864. He said, "For my part, I believe this war is the result of false political doctrine for which we all as a people are responsible, that any and every people has a right to self-government. In this belief, why I assert for our government the highest military prerogatives, I am willing to bear in patience that the political nonsense of slaves' rights, states' rights, freedom of conscience, freedom of the press, and other such trash have deluded the Southern people into war, anarchy, bloodshed, and the foulest crimes that have disgraced any time or any people." So he thought, you know, what is stated in the Constitution was just nonsense. And Sherman carried it out to the nth degree, making war against civilians. He wrote to U.S. Secretary of War Edward M. Stanton in 1864, "There's a class of people, men, women, and children, who must be killed or banished before you can hope for peace and order." And he said the Southern people needed to be wiped out, their homes and cities destroyed, their lands plowed under, and the whole region repopulated with European immigrants. So these were the people that we were fighting against, and these were the people that were implementing their political policies toward the South after the war was over. And Southerners, far from being portrayed as the dullards that they are on national television and in movies, knew exactly what was going on and what would happen to us if we lost this war. Irish General, Major General Patrick Claiborne, Major General in the Confederate Army, said, "Every man should endeavor to understand the meaning of subjugation before it is too late. Surrender means that the history of this heroic struggle will be written by the enemy, that our youth will be trained by Northern school teachers, will learn from Northern school books their version of the war. It will be impressed by all the influences of history and education to regard our gallant dead as traitors and our maimed veterans as fit subjects for derision. It said that slavery is all that we're fighting for. Even if this were true, which we deny, slavery is not all our enemies are fighting for. It is merely the pretense to establish sectional superiority and a more centralized form of government and deprive up of our rights and liberties. So they knew what was going on. And the list of war criminals in the North goes on and on. We've got really a bad character coming up right after break. Thaddeus Stevens and what he said about the South.
Those are some of the most shocking statements I've ever heard in my life. We've got to get that out to the public. Be right back,
yes,
folks, at this break. Be right back, folks.
Calling all patriots, faith-based leaders, sheriffs, and elected officials. It's time to stand up for our Constitution and protect our God-given rights. Join us at the Foundation for Freedom Conference at the Rosen Shingle Creek Hotel on September 6th and 7th. Hear from national speakers who've successfully fought against unconstitutional government overreach. Be inspired by constitutional attorneys, sheriffs, and more. Foundationforfreedom.us to register now. God bless America. See you in Orlando.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ had been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today. And gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Go ahead, make my day.
Dear Blood River Radio, precious people, listen, I'll tell you what. I was just telling Gene during the break, I'm 77 years old, and I don't have a doctorate. I don't have a PhD, but I'm fairly well educated. I have a college degree, which is like everybody else does nowadays. Everybody's mammy's got a college degree, I guess. But I've never heard anything like Professor Gene is talking about tonight. This is earth-shattering. It's really disgusting that somebody like that, they would actually, what General Sherman said, but we've got, now you see how this is so vital, the third hour. This isn't just a flam bam history course. This is a wake you up. This is a damn wake up call. And these people, Brother Gene, these people like Sherman are still alive and well today. They were the same people that firebombed Dresden. There's some same people still trying to wipe out white Christians, especially in the South today. Go ahead, Brother Gene.
Okay, what we wanted to emphasize to our listeners, I didn't make all this up. And I'm giving our people actual quotes of what these people said so that we can understand that a lot of the stuff we were taught in school, and I was too, I was gullible. Heck, all I wanted was get through history class and wait till 3 o'clock came around for football practice.
So I
wasn't taking the notes that I took in history class in the 11th grade and ran home and looked it up to see if it was right. I didn't care. Just get to 3 o'clock football practice. So
get that damn
we all had to do a re-education course there. But this is what these people said. And they meant it, and they carried it out through a political vendetta against the South. I'll give you one more example. This is Thaddeus Stevens. He was a radical Marxist communist. He was a Republican representative from Pennsylvania. And he said, the talk of restoring the Union like it was and the Constitution as it is one of the absurdities which I have heard repeated until I have become sick of it. There are many things which make such an event impossible. The Union never shall, with my consent, be restored under the Constitution as it is. The Union as it was and the Constitution as it is, God forbid it. We must conquer the southern states and hold them as conquered provinces. Now, Robert E. Lee, another southerner that saw what was going on. After the war, when he was president of Washington College in Lexington, Virginia, and, of course, they're trying to get rid of the name of Washington and Lee University. They were all, they were Southerners. They were horrible people that they stood up against the mighty empire. Lee said this to Governor Stockdale of Texas, who was visiting him at his office there in Lexington at Washington College. Governor, if I had foreseen the use these people desired to make of their victory, there would have been no surrender at Appomattox. No, sir, not by me. Had I seen the results of subjugation, I would have preferred to die at Appomattox with my brave men, my sword in my right hand. And Amen. After the war, the South was just left in ruins. And we talked about this last week with Monica and the parallels in that article that Dr. Weber wrote in the Barnes Review comparing the destruction of the South and the destruction of Germany. The larger cities were destroyed, but rural areas as well. Farm buildings had been burned, the crops were burned or wiped clean, livestock was taken or slaughtered. And this is another thing the Yankees Army did when they came through the South. They would clean out the stables and dump the manure down the wells, which meant the water was poisoned. You get cholera from that. They would take the salt from the salt boxes where you would salt meat in the smokehouse, and I think it's 3 weeks or something. I can't remember exactly because my grandparents used to butcher hogs and made their own hams and bacon and things like that. But Mine anyway, too. Whatever it was, they had these great big salt boxes. They would take the salt and scatter it out across the fields, which meant you couldn't grow anything there. So it was something that they did to just not only destroy the armies, but destroy the food supply. The 13th Amendment was passed in 1865 with Southern support, abolishing slavery, and it said in any form of involuntary servitude except for punishment for a crime. So nobody argued with that too much. They knew that was going to be over. And one of the people that they never tell you about after the war was Nathan Bedford Forrest. He was a post-war civil rights activist and in the employment for blacks in Memphis, Tennessee. He was working on building that Memphis, Marion, Mississippi, and Selma Railroad after the war, and he hired blacks, and he caught all kind of hell because he paid the blacks the same wages he was paying the whites, and he was criticized in Memphis, and they said, what are you doing? He said, well, they do the same work. Shouldn't they get the same money? And now, the congressional elections of 1866, the radical Marxist Republicans come to power and pass the Reconstruction Acts, and there were a whole bunch of them. The South was kicked out of the Union, which is unconstitutional. The South was divided into five military districts. They abolished the states, and the South was turned into five military districts, and they were placed under martial law, ruled by the Marxist Northern generals. They destroyed the sovereign governments of those states and basically turned the South into one vast gulag. Southern representation in the U.S. government, which had been increased due to former slaves that were no longer slaves. Now, instead of being counted as three-fifths of the population, they were counted as one whole. So that gave the Southerners a great increase in Congress. Combined with Norman Democrats and more moderate Republicans, would topple the radical Marxists from power, which meant they had to be prosecuted for war crimes. Each state then had to draft a new constitution with a federally controlled education mandates, which would indoctrinate Southern children against state governments and promote the supremacy of the Marxist federal government. And they had to ratify the 14th Amendment, which not only granted former slaves citizenship, but essentially took away the power of the states and placed it in the hands of the central government. So up until the 14th Amendment, we were citizens of Tennessee or Illinois or Georgia or South Carolina or New York. No longer. We were now citizens of the federal empire in Washington, which meant they made all the decisions. And the 14th Amendment, if you go through and read that, that is a long, long, long amendment. It's got all kind of junk crammed in that. You heard it just recently in this presidential election year. They were using the 14th Amendment to try to keep former President Trump from running. And they, of course, were accusing him of the great insurrection on January 6th. And the 14th Amendment says that those people who are involved in an insurrection against the U.S. government were prohibited from running for Congress or a elected office in the U.S. government. And the reason that was put in that 14th Amendment, after the war, all of these states now that had larger representation in the South than they did before the war, because now blacks were part of the South, counting as voting citizens, they could send Democratic representatives to Washington. And that's the last thing the Marxist Republicans wanted.
It backfired.
So it kind of backfired, blew up in their face. So they had to come up with a scheme to keep the blacks and the whites at each other's throats. And this is where a lot of the hatred and animosity between the black and white races in the South came into being. It wasn't before the war, because whites had grown up with blacks and blacks had grown up with whites. They'd lived together. They'd worked together in the fields. The boys had played. They'd gone swimming together, gone fishing together. When the war came along, a lot of the black boys went with the Southern white boys and joined the Confederate Army. And they don't want to tell you that. But the Confederate Army was integrated in 1861. The U.S. Army wasn't integrated until Harry Truman in 1948. Now, there were a lot more blacks in the U.S. Army than there were in the Confederate Army, but there were a lot more whites in the Yankee Army than there were in the Confederate Army, just because of population. But the black units in the U.S. Army were segregated, and they would not commission a black as an officer, because they didn't want some white Irish NCO to have to salute a black officer. So all of the black units, like this, what was that movie, Glory, about that 54th Massachusetts Infantry, all of the black units in the U.S. Army had white officers, and usually they were the bust outs from the U.S. Army. They were so bad, so incompetent, that no whites would serve under them. So they pawned them off on the black units. And they said, oh, yeah, we've got all these freed Negroes now that are fighting for their freedom, for their fellow Negroes, and yada, yada, yada. No, they were the, you know, just target practice. And they did here at Nashville, in the Battle of Nashville. They, on the 15th, they were slaughtered over in that railroad cut on Rains Hill, because they marched into a railroad cut, and the Confederates were up on top of it shooting down on them like fish in a barrel. The next day, they did even worse. On the 16th, they attacked Stephen D. Lee's position on Peach Orchard Hill, and they attacked across the front of the Confederate position. So you imagine that. It's like you're shooting down targets in a target range at the state fair or something like that. So that's how much contempt they had for the blacks. So anyway, we just throw that in there. This primary aim of Reconstruction, and we use that in quotes, was to exterminate Southern political power to ensure that the federal government would remain in the hands of the Northern political, economic, and social elites. The radical Marxist Communist Republicans well understood that if white and black Southerners worked together to restore prosperity to the South, Republican rule would fall. To prevent this from becoming a social and political reality, the Marxists used its control of communists with the age-old tactic of divide and conquer and rule. Stir up as much racial tension and hatred as possible. Use as much as possible black troops to occupy the South and convince the recently freed and primarily illiterate slaves that, watch out, massa going to put y'all back in chains, initiating a wave of racial hatred and violence.
Pursuing liberty. using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Summer is upon us and the weather is beautiful. Everyone has a favorite outdoor activity. Golf, bike riding, bird watching, long walks. Ask 100 people and you'll get 100 answers. But if everyday aches and pains are keeping you on the sidelines, I have one answer, Relief Factor. Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free daily supplement that helps your body fight pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor uses a unique formula of natural ingredients. It doesn't just mask pain. It helps reduce or even eliminate it. Wherever you're hurting, back, neck, joints, or muscles, in 3 weeks or less, you'll start to feel the difference all day, every day. So whatever you like to do, swimming, pickleball, hanging out in the garden, Relief Factor can help you feel good again and let you enjoy all your favorite outdoor activities all summer long. ReliefFactor.com, 1-800-4-RELIEF, 1-800-473-5433. Fight pain naturally with Relief Factor.
A time of mourning in Ukraine.
Funeral services have been held in eastern Ukraine for the victims of one of the deadliest Russian airstrikes since the invasion began. As grieving families and local residents mourned, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky pledged to boost domestic weapons production by creating underground facilities to withstand Russian missile and drone strikes. He also renewed calls for the lifting of restrictions on using Western-supplied weapons against Russian territory, noting that Ukraine is also developing its own missiles to put pressure on Russia. I'm Rika Ann Garcia.
Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania say they're committed to completing by the end of the decade a financially troubled and badly delayed high-speed rail project integrating the three Baltic countries with the continental European rail network. The original project, launched in 2014, primarily faced with European Union money. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. Sluggish job report throwing questions about when the Fed will or will not raise rates later this month.
Hiring by America's employers picked up a bit in August, and the unemployment rate dipped for the first time since March. That's a sign that the job market may be cooling, but remains sturdy. Employers added 142,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.2%. The figures show a job market slowing under the pressure of high interest rates, but still growing. With inflation falling steadily back to the Federal Reserve target, the Fed is preparing to cut its key interest rate. The mixed report on the job market raises the question of how large a cut the Fed will announce at its next meeting. Hiya Pinjwani, Washington.
Google being slammed by UK regulators who say it's taking advantage of its dominance in digital advertising to thwart competition in Britain. Claims ratchet up pressure the tech giant is facing on both sides of the Atlantic. More on these stories at townhall.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
The Epoch Times. NewsTimes.com.
Patriots, faith leaders, sheriffs, this is your call to action. The Foundation for Freedom Conference is coming to Orlando September 6th and 7th at the Rosenshingle Creek Hotel. Learn how counties across America are pushing back against government overreach and protecting constitutional rights. Featuring top constitutional attorneys and sheriffs who stood firm during the COVID crisis. Visit foundationforfreedom.us and register today. Together, we can restore our nation. God bless America.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. I'm so glad that the bitter ender here. Not only did he come in, rescue my shot up chest almost, but he's giving this, of all the lessons the bitter ender has given, this might be the best. I think it's the most shocking. Anyway, speaking of the bitter ender, we'll go right back to bitter ender to continue this advance. And it is an advanced class. I guarantee, double damn to you, you'll never hear anything like this. I don't care where you go to college, where you go to school, you will not hear this kind of truth. But go ahead, bitter ender.
Well, of course you won't hear it, because all this information flies in the face of the politically correct, spoon-fed propaganda that the government has fed us for the last 160 years. And they don't want anybody upsetting their apple cart and telling the truth, because they can continue to lie. And here's the thing, Eddie. The reason they hate the South and they hate Southern history so much, if we can start convincing people out there that, hey, you know, we were lied into a war in 1861, and Lincoln said he needed a war and he needed the South to fire the first shot, and lied to the peace representatives that were sent to Washington to try to negotiate a peace over the federal troops at Fort Sumter in Charleston and Fort Pickens in Pensacola. He lied to them, or had his Secretary of State, William Seward, lie to him. And while they were sending a fleet down there to invade the South, so people might start thinking, now, wait a minute. If they lied about the war in 1861, then they lied about the war in 1898 with Spain.
Yes.
And remember the Maine. And
yes.
Now, did they lie about the war in 1917? Were we lied into a war in Europe that we had no business being a part of in 1917? And what about the war in 1941? That Roosevelt did everything he could to start a war with Germany, and the Germans wouldn't take the bait. And so he had to turn on Japan and do everything he could to provoke them into an attack on the U.S. fleet at Pearl Harbor, so then he could have an excuse to go to war with Germany, which he and his Jewish and communist advisors in his cabinet wanted all along. They wanted the war with Germany. And they threw everything they had into the war with Germany and just kind of left the Pacific to a few Marines and the Navy out there. And, well, good luck, boys. We're going to take care of Europe first.
Yep.
So then the Gulf of Tonkin, where we lied into a war in Vietnam. Weapons of mass destruction that weren't there, where we lied into a war in Iraq. So you see, there starts to become a pattern to all of this. And if they allow the South and the history of the South to get out, and people realize what a lie this whole thing was about the war against the South, then people might start thinking and doing their own research and say, wait a minute, what about this war in 1898, 1917, 1941, 1964, and so forth and so on, and say, whoa, wait a minute, don't get us into another war in Ukraine or Israel. We're not falling for this again. You know, fool me once, shame on you, but fool me twice,
yes,
shame on me. Yeah. So anyway, this is what was going on in the South. South was overrun with civilians, not only the military, but civilians coming down to the South. And one of the worst were the carpetbaggers. And this is a political candidate who seeks election in an area where they have no local connections in the U.S., a person from the northern states who went south after Lincoln's war to profit from the economic and political situation of the so-called Reconstruction of the defeated and prostrate South. And a carpetbagger is a person perceived as an unscrupulous opportunist. And they certainly were. And that's where they got a lot of the land in the South. And these companies got these huge timber rights to thousands of square acres in the South. The rich carpetbaggers came down here and pretty much stole the land from the Southerners on Hilton Head Island. And now that's one of the top vacation spots or tourist destinations is Hilton Head Island there. But that was stolen by the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, and all of these rich wheelers and dealers that came down here and got the land basically for pennies on the dollar because the South couldn't do anything about it. Another thing that the Northern radical Marxist Republicans did, they passed the Franchise Act, which said that anybody who had served in the Confederate Army or even aided the Confederate Army lost their right to vote. So white Southerners couldn't vote, but illiterate blacks could vote because of the 15th Amendment, which gave the voting rights to the blacks. They couldn't read, but they would round them up, and the federal army that was still here would hustle these blacks around to vote in district number one, and they couldn't read, so they had a drawing of a donkey and an elephant. And they couldn't. That's where the donkey and the elephant came from.
God almighty.
So you vote for this thing over here, this elephant. Oh, don't vote for that donkey. That's a jackass. Those are bad people, the Southern Democrats. You don't vote for that. You vote for this elephant over here. So they'd vote in district number one, and then they'd round them up and haul them off over to district number two to vote, and they'd vote over there. And then three and district four and district five, and the Southerners couldn't do anything about it because they couldn't vote, so they couldn't elect a sheriff or election officials or a tax assessor. So the tax assessor could come into your house that's about 30 feet by 20 feet, and they say, well, we're going to appraise your cabin there at about $2 million, and your taxes are $100,000 on that. Well, it could have been $100 million, and Southerners didn't have any money. They couldn't pay it. So it was sold at auction, but the only people that were allowed to bid on it in the auction were these carpetbaggers that had come down here. And so that's where so much of the land was stolen from the Southerners, and these large timber companies up north bought, like I said, millions of acres of timberland, and they just clear cut it. They came and cut everything down. And Southerners knew enough sense before the war, when you're cutting timber, you leave some of it. So you prevent erosion, and you have you replant the trees and grow it back. Well, the Northerners didn't care what happened to the soil in the South. They wanted to make money off of it. So they'd come in and clear cut. They would plant crops, and they would not, the landowners, the Northern landowners, these people that were absentee landlords, they would plant crops right up to the sharecropper's house. And Southerners, after the war, black and white, were slaves. They called it sharecropping, but basically you were slaves to the land.
My grandparents were sharecroppers.
Yeah, they'd plant crops right up to the front porch of the house to get as much yield as they could, and then plant the same crop year after year after year after year on the land until it was totally worn out. And Southerners before the war knew you don't do that. You leave a field fallow or barren or don't plant anything in it every year, and you give it a couple of years for the soil to replenish itself. And then the next 2 years later, a year later, whatever, then you can use it. Then you pick another field and leave it fallow or bare. But that didn't happen because the absentee landlords, the carpetbaggers, they didn't care. They just wanted as much yield from the crops as they could. And so they could care less about subsistence farming, growing vegetables and things like that the sharecroppers needed. They wanted cotton or tobacco or whatever the cash crop was, planted right up to their front porch, back porch, left side of the house, right side of the house, take it all out. So that's what we were looking at.
Gene, for a history lesson for anybody in Tennessee, there's a place about halfway between where I live and you live, a place called Natchez Trace State Forest.
Yep.
And it's beautiful now, but there's plaques up there, historical plaques you can read, and the Natchez Trace State Forest was a project to reconstruct what the Yankees had destroyed, because, like Gene's saying, it was just that they call them hollers, gullies that really didn't exist until the Yankees came in and raped the land like Gene's talking about. And so what the state of Tennessee has done, they come in and reseeded and bought that as, and that's just straight state forest, like something like 48,000 acres. That's been repeated around all around the South, Holly Springs National Forest. But they had to come in and do that and plant trees, oak, dogwood, you know, a pine, cypress, whatever, beech, hickory.
Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful now, but you can still see rows of ways where it has eroded, especially all up into the 20s. It's horrible erosion. But if people want to see this history that you talked about, they want to see a living example of it. If anybody in Tennessee, if you're anywhere close to the Natchez Trace State Forest, you can go there, and there's little history lessons there. You can read on the material they have up there. But go ahead, Gene. I thought that people would like to see something like that. Anecdotal evidence.
It took the South over 100 years to recover from that. And, so much of the land was destroyed, the farm implements, the housing, the everything. And then the laws that were put in place during the 12 years of Reconstruction made sure that they kept the South under the heel of the Northern armies. Okay.
I wonder why we call them damn Yankees.
We'll go to the break. We'll finish up our last segment.
I wonder why we call them damn Yankees, Jay. Be right back. Be right back, folks.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I just went off on a rabbit trail, but I was telling Gene about my best friend in the world for 61, coming up on 62 years. He's a prominent person over in North Alabama, and he's come around really, really well. He would say something to back up the bitter ender. He said that we are suffering right now from a mass invasion reconstruction, what Gene would say, and rightfully so, deconstruction in the South. He said because our bitter enemies, and I wonder who could be the Jew. I don't guess he'd be the Jew, but flooding, especially the South, with just unnumbered dark races that hate our guts. And he said it's just like Gene said. He said it's never stopped. The hatred to the South has never stopped. And I'd like to also say, don't want to interrupt the bitter ender too much more. Some of our dearest friends, some of our dear supporters are north of the Mason-Dixon line. And they'll tell you they know more about that than the people in the South. We have people in the South, and I tell them, Southerners, what we think, it's kind of a state of mind and a state of the heart. But also people in New Jersey who think Gene hung them. As a matter of fact, well, I knew one of them. I also can't say his name. His name is Frank White, and he's a Yankee. And he says that Gene is a national treasure. So we have many people that love us in the North. When we say Yankee, we're talking about these bastards that hate the Southerners. Anyway, I guess I'm just babbling on. But go ahead, Bitter Ender. Okay. Doing a great job, brother.
Well, now, here's the thing about people in the North. A lot of people in the North are conservative. And conservatives look for facts. The liberals are the ones that go on emotion. And they vote for crazy people like Kamala and, you know, Sleepy Joe and stuff like that. That's why they get this country in so much trouble. They vote on emotions. But conservatives look at the facts and say, yeah, if you pass that spending bill, what's it going to do to us? It's going to cause inflation. And our gas prices are going to go up. Our food's going to go up. And so conservatives look at the end result. And they also, conservatives are more likely to look at history. And a conservative in the North will start looking honestly at history and say, you know, these Southern people were right to get out of the Union. And that's why we have a lot of people in the North that support the South and support the history of our war for independence. And now they're looking at the situation we have today, and they say, you know, this started with Lincoln and this seizing power and creating this federal dictatorship and this almighty federal government and putting the states as simply minority rule under the heel of a dictatorship. And so that's where a lot of people in the South actually support the concept of an independent South in 1861. And there are a lot of people now in other parts of the country that are looking at secession or separation today, not just in the South and not just in Texas. But anyway, so, you know,
California.
That's it. So anyway, getting back to our redestruction, the federal government used armed black militias to cover the cost of military occupation by way of confiscation. Now, according to the Congressional Globe, all proceeds from the sale of contraband and captured property seized or captured by the militias will constitute a part of the fund out of which they will be paid. Congress basically incentivized the theft of private property through the Union League and the Freedmen's Bureau. And the North used divide, conquer, and rule to draw first blood, and Southerners are forced then to band together to form organizations to protect themselves. Now, as soon as the last shot was fired, the Southerners didn't immediately start the Ku Klux Klan or some of these other preservation groups, vigilante groups to protect themselves. For instance, in North Carolina, it was the attacks against the civilians and especially against the women that these vigilante groups were formed. And in South Carolina, it was the Red Shirts. In Arkansas, Thomas C. Hindman, who was a former Confederate general, formed a group called the Young Democracy, which was working to unite white Southerners and former slaves against the radical Marxists. And for his efforts, he was assassinated in his home in Helena, Arkansas, in September of 1868. Out in Texas, it was the Knights of the White Camellia. And in southern Middle Tennessee and northern Alabama, it was the Ku Klux Klan. And the Klan wasn't started as a political organization. It was started as a soldiers organization. And they had no political agenda at all. They were just some kids that were former Confederate soldiers that got their bunch of crazy-looking costumes, and they'd ride around at night and say they were ghosts from Shiloh or Chickamauga. And everybody knew it was a big joke. And they'd always ride by their girlfriend's house, and their girlfriend would always pretend to faint, but when she fainted, she always fell into her boyfriend's arms. And so everybody knew it was a joke until this Reconstruction government got so bad. And then it turned from like a fraternity organization or something, a soldiers organization, into a political organization. And they went after the carpetbaggers and the Reconstruction rulers that were down here. And the blacks were just happened to be part of that, and they were caught up in that. And so the blacks weren't hated because they were blacks. They were hated because they were on the enemy's side. They were conspirators. And you look at, you say, well, the Southerners were so terrible. No, they weren't. Southerners were just like anybody else. When the German armies were pulling out of Paris and pulling out of France as the Allies were closing in, the French went after the conspirators and the people that had sided with the Germans while they were being occupied.
Sure, and
the the women had their heads shaved and they were beaten up, and a lot of the men were beaten up and shot and killed, but because they had sided with the Germans. And the same thing happened in the South. They went after the rule of the carpetbag regime, the whites that had cheated us out of our land, that had cheated people out of voting, and all the other atrocities that they committed. And the blacks threw their lot in with the northern carpetbaggers and the occupation army. So, of course, they were hated right along with the rest of them. And that's what caused this big, huge divide between white and black Southerners. It's lasted pretty much till today. So that's where it came from. Now, according to the United States Congress Minority Report on the Ku Klux Klan, they said, had there been no wanton oppression of the South, there would not have been a Ku Klux Klan. When the corruption, extortion, and villainy of the Reconstruction governments are thoroughly understood, the world would be amazed at the long suffering and endurance of the Southern people. That's from the U.S. Congress. That's not from the Confederate Congress. So the things that happened, like we said, to the South, that poverty is not natural, it is man-made. The poverty that racked the South in the decades after Lincoln's war did not just fall out of the sky. It was deliberately created by the Marxist-controlled federal government. The loss in slaves, few remaining resources that were badly needed to recover were confiscated. A cotton tax, which in just 3 years extracted $68 million from the South. Slavery in the South did not end after the war. It just morphed into something called sharecropping. And sharecropping is basically what peonage in Mexico and serfdom in Russia was, that how people were tied to the land and owned by the landowners that came in after the war. Now, the 10 states with the highest poverty rates in 2021, starting from 10 and moving up to the worst, were number 10, South Carolina, 9, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, West Virginia, New Mexico, Louisiana, and Mississippi. And 9 out of those were all southern states that were destroyed during the war. So that will give you a little idea of what was going on there. So the passive Reconstruction then, the transition after 1877 from active, the phase of Reconstruction, into passive. Well, they wanted Southerners to join their military and fight in the wars for them. So they started naming these military bases around the South for Southern generals: Fort Benning, Fort Bragg, Fort Hood in Texas, Fort A.P. Hill in Virginia. And they had Southern officers that served in the war with Spain. General Fitzhugh Lee, nephew of Robert E. Lee, served. General Fighting Joe Wheeler from Alabama. General Matthew Butler, Confederate officer, served in the Spanish-American War, and General Thomas Rosser also served. In World War I, the National Guard from Alabama, Georgia, and Florida formed the Dixie Division, and the two most highly decorated U.S. military service personnel in World War I and World War II were Sergeant Alvin York in World War I from Tennessee. And Sergeant Audie Murphy from Texas. So we pretty much fought their wars for them and paid for it. And it goes even further than that. If you look at a lot of the famous people in the U.S. military, the 13th Commandant of the Marine Corps, John A. Lejeune, his father was a Confederate captain.
Wow. How many people
Army
know
Lieutenant
that?
George Patton, grandfather, was a Confederate officer, fought at Winchester and Newmarket. Army Lieutenant General Simon Bolivar Buckner was killed on Okinawa. U.S. Army Air Corps Brigadier General Nathan Bedford Forrest III was shot down and killed over Germany. First American general killed in World War II. President Theodore Roosevelt had an uncle, was a Georgia Confederate. President Woodrow Wilson, father, Dr. Joseph Wilson, was a chaplain in the Confederate Army. And then Chesty Puller had his ancestors, a Marine officer, had his ancestors in the Confederate Army. Yep. So here we are. That's what they did to us. Hope people will realize what happened.
You know, now the one encouraging fact is I hear that the military services, especially the Army and Marines, the ground pounders, the grunts, are suffering a critical shortage of inductees, people to join in. Duh, I wonder why. Yep. They've been treating the South like dog crap for all these years. I hope they run completely out of soldiers. They're talking about the draft. With Bitter Ender, you did probably the best job you've done, probably the most startling information, really almost like a horror show. But so thank you so much, Bitter Ender, for coming on. And we'll see you soon, as soon as we come. I'll keep in touch with you. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you, Miss Lizzie. Thank you.